You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to help you talk to me if I really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to give the information, asking for love, but blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise. And I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Hi, everybody. This is Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show, and that is the show you've chosen to listen to. We're glad you're here. I'm the host, and we like to think of ourselves as the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. Well, we are brought to you by Renaissance Precious Metals, converting your soon-to-be worthless cash into gold and silver that'll withstand any economic calamity that's coming your way, short of confiscation. You got to take care of that part on your own. Steve Quayle, my friend. Renaissance Precious Metals. I am a customer as well as a colleague of Steve's, and I'm a very satisfied customer. How do you find out about Renaissance? Give them a call tomorrow at 406-586-4842. That's 406-586-4842. We're also brought to you by preparewithdave.com. Now, we tried for a long time, and you probably have heard me tell this story, to reduce the amount of storable food we were selling at one time. We used to sell in bulk 6 months to 2 years, and that's really the recommended amount because you know you need food, water, guns, gold, ammo, and medicine, because at the first sign of trouble, FEMA will not be there to bail you out. But I recognize a lot of you could not afford that much, and you need to buy over time. So I went to the manufacturer. I said, hey, give me a reduction. They said, how about 4 weeks? And I said, perfect. That'll get people through the initial part of a crisis and allow them to build to their existing stockpile at a price they can afford. I said, how much do we charge? They said, $250. I said, too much. They said, well, what do you want to do, Dave? And I said, what's the lowest you can go? And they said, $99. And that's what we've got. We have the very best storable food deal in the country. 25-year shelf life, no glyphosates, no GMOs, restaurant quality, lots of diversity so you don't habituate to the food. Now, how do you get yours? You go to the URL and simply type in this catchy little phrase, preparewithdave.com. That's right, preparewithdave.com, and get started protecting your family, preparing for the future today. The worst thing that ever happens with this is you eat your own mistake. Preparewithdave.com. Finally, we're brought to you by my friend Bob Griswold in Ready Made Resources. I call him King Prepper because he has everything that you could possibly want. Everything from water filtration with his Berkey water filters to night vision. He'll help you finance them. And also he has every array of communication, sleeping bags, bug out bags, anything that you want for prepping. My friend Bob has it. And here's really the best thing about Bob, in my opinion. He's one of the few guys in this business who actually consult with you for free. He'll assess where you're at and make recommendations. How do you find out about this? Well, you simply go to readymaderesources.com. That's readymaderesources.com. Look at what they have available and then call the number on the screen and ask for my friend Bob Griswold and tell him Dave Hodges of the Common Sense Show sent you for the grade A treatment. Well, in this hour, I am really pleased and privileged to have just a terrific guest on. We've had him on before. It's been a while, and he and I used to talk some about water and about climate change and all. I mean, we just had some fantastic discussions, Tim and I and Sheila Zielinski. And the other night, I was driving around, and I have to confess, I don't listen to Coast a whole lot anymore. I'm just too busy, go to bed early. But I heard Tim on Coast, and it was so compelling, I said, we've got to get Dr. Tim Ball back on. So, Tim, I'm really glad you could join us. I want to talk to you about climate change. I'd like to cover some of those fine points that you went over with George Norrie, because they literally made me wake up, take notice, and realize to a deeper degree how ripped off we truly are. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Well, thank you, Dave, and thanks for the kind words about the past. And, yes, we're at a very crucial juncture in America's history, and because of what America's doing in the world history. One of the things that doesn't get talked about is Americans are concerned about their what's going on and the control of their government and their loss of control of free speech and so on. But there are an awful lot of people outside who are just as concerned because we don't have any of the basic things that America has. And the only chance that we have of getting them is that if America can retain them. So this is why it's so crucial that we deal with these things and help people understand what's actually happening.
Well, along those lines, I don't know if you heard about this or not, but at the recent Bilderberg conference, our former president, Barack Obama, gave a speech which could be summarized as, America needs to shut up and get on board with the New World Order. Did you hear about that?
Oh, yes, and I follow the Bilderberg, and I've been following them for years, and of course, so much of it grew out of what the Club of Rome did, which was, of course, founded by David Rockefeller, and they were the ones that were instrumental in setting up this whole global warming deception, I've written a book, a couple of books about it. My latest one is titled Human-Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History. And what they did was, of course, they needed something that was threatening the whole globe so that they could transcend nationalism and say, look, we need a global government in order to deal with this. That's what's behind this whole thing. But if I could, Dave, since I talked to you, I gave a presentation in Phoenix a year ago in December. It preceded, by the way, a visit to Washington at the invitation of the Trump administration, and I'll fill you in on what happened there. But at that Phoenix presentation, I made the argument that what is happening right now is the final phase of the American Revolution. As you know, Obama went around the world telling the world that American exceptionalism meant that Americans thought they were superior to everybody else, when, of course, the reality is that American exceptionalism means you've got an exceptional form of government. And it's not only exceptional, but it is so unique to America. My earlier comments refer to this. For example, I'm in the middle of fighting. I just won one of them, but I got three lawsuits for comments that I made that wouldn't even have been allowed to be filed in an American court, and it's cost me $600,000 so far in legal bills just to shut me up. Now, fortunately, I've had huge support from around the world because, as I said, people around the world realize what's going on. But in the Phoenix presentation, the point I was making about this being the final phase of the American Revolution was the first thing that you got was free speech. You're the only country in the world that has that as its primary reason for existence. And the Founding Fathers knew how important and critical it was and how much future governments, American governments, would want to take that away, that they gave you the Second Amendment, which is the right to prevent your own government from taking your right to free speech away from you. Now, just to give you a quick story of this, in Canada, the people of Quebec, who by United Nations rules are a completely a clearly identified cultural group with their own language, their own economy, their own territory, which, of course, you look at the Israeli thing that's going on there, the people of Quebec wanted to separate from Canada. Now, you can debate whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, but they, as a group, wanted to exercise that right. The Canadian government, under the father of the current Prime Minister, Pierre Trudeau, he declared the War Measures Act. Now, what that meant was, this is a rule that immediately and completely suspends all rights of all citizens. Completely. Right. The Prime Minister takes total and absolute control. And he then called out the Canadian Army to suppress the Canadian people. I mean, you can't imagine that going on in the United States, but here it is going on this so-called, quiet little kind country to the north of you. And so, as I said, it's your own government that's your greatest threat to you. And
oh,
by the
yeah.
way, yeah, sorry, the Canadian government have just passed new, stricter laws on guns in Canada. Private citizens are not allowed to hold handguns. And of course, the Conservative Party are saying, well, that lives it with all with the criminals, but you know those arguments. But anyway, the Second Amendment, the third thing that the Founding Fathers did was they gave you private ownership of land. I cannot tell you how unique that is. There is not another country in the world that has private ownership of land. Canadians believe that they own the property that they live on, but they don't. It is still designated, all of Canada is designated Crown land. And the government can come in and take it from you at any time that they choose. And there's nothing that you can do about it. And you look at Britain, which of course is why you left Britain. The current situation in Britain, where you have this supposed Magna Carta, which was a joke. I mean, John Kennedy kept pushing the Magna Carta as a big liberating thing. It was rubbish. What the Magna Carta was about was there were 13 powerful landowners who didn't like the way the king was treating them, so they went and said, hey, behave yourself. It was like Prince Charles going to the queen and saying, hey, I don't like what you're doing, mum. But what the Magna Carta didn't tell you was that back on all of these lands, the peasants were still in slavery, in complete slavery as serfs. They had no right to ownership of land or anything else. So that's rubbish. And in today's Britain, one third of all the land is controlled by five people, and one of those people is Prince Charles. It is absolutely incredible. Now, Americans have no idea about this, about the importance of private ownership of land. And but the one thing that is the third phase of the revolution is the access to information. And up until the internet came into effect, the power elite have always controlled the information, and they have done it through the mainstream media. And I'm going to read you a poem now, and this is from 1782. Now think about that relative to what's going on in the United States. And it's written by a William Cowper, C-O-W-P-E-R. He was an English poet, and of course was one of those that was talking out about democracy and freedom and so on. And of course, many of the English left there and went to America to help the revolution because they knew what was going on. But here's the poem. How shall I speak of thee or thy power address, thou God of our idolatry, the press? By thee, religion, liberty, and laws exert their influence and advance their cause. By thee, worse plagues than Pharaoh's land befell, diffused, make earth the vestibule of hell. Thou fountain at which drink the good and wise, thou ever-bubbling spring of endless lies. Like Eden's dead probationary tree, knowledge of good and evil is from thee. Now, Trump could be saying that today. That wonderful line in there, thou ever-bubbling spring of endless lies. And that's the fake news. And of course, when you look at what's going on with this global warming issue, it's the original fake news. It's been going on for 40 years now, or more, 50 years, because it's promoted by the press, and it's not only that, but it's was developed and maintained through the deep state. Well, who are the deep state? The deep state are the bureaucrats. And a few years ago, an American commentator by the name of Mary McCarthy said this. She said, bureaucracy is the rule of no one. It has become the modern form of despotism. And there you have it. That's what's going on. The bureaucrats have taken over, and you see the deep state fighting in America to undermine America and everything it stands for. And so this is why I'm arguing with you that you're in the final phase of the American Revolution, because with the internet, you're able to bypass the mainstream media. They are the ones shouting loudest about Trump to stop tweeting. And of course, Trump brilliantly said, I'll stop tweeting when you stop telling lies, Well, he's talking about the endless lies that this guy was talking about in 1782. So, as I said, this is the final phase. And also, by the way, notice that what Obama did, one of the last things he did before he left office was he brought in net neutrality. And this is how they do it. Oh, is this something nice and a term that means nothing to anyone? Net neutrality. What on earth does that mean? Well, they always pick something that sounds reasonable in order to allow you to take control, and to take control of you. And net neutrality was made. Obama argued, look, these internet providers are ripping you off. And you are not able to fight them, but we, the government, can deal with it for you. Therefore, let us take control of the internet and we'll deal with it. That was, of course, trying to block the internet and the access to the information that people finally had. And then, of course, you saw recently with the House hearings on the internet and Facebook with Zuckerberg and so on. And if you listen to the Democrats, this is all about, it wasn't about Facebook or Google or anything else. It was all about government taking over control of the internet. Because they know that that is the vehicle by which the public can take over. And notice that what happens with the internet in these despotic countries. I mean, in China, the government control it. And the first thing that happens when a socialist government takes over, they take control of the internet. So that's where the battle is going on. That's where the control of information and access to information, and why, as I said, this is the final phase of the American Revolution.
Well, I battle this every single day. On my website, 3 years ago, Google accounted for over 20% of my traffic on referrals, and today it's 0.4%. And I do an ongoing battle with YouTube over censorship for the most benign things. Things that CNN and Fox can cover with impunity, I get demonetized for. So I hear what you're saying, but this is where I part company with President Trump, and I have been critical of him. First of all, these are unregulated monopolies. Every single one of them, Twitter to YouTube to Google, they're all unregulated monopolies. And as such, they are subject to antitrust laws that Trump is not enforcing and the Congress is not enforcing. And then there's one more thing, and Ted Cruz captured this with the Zuckerberg hearings. He said, are you an open forum or not? And Zuckerberg refused to answer the question. He asked the question of Twitter, YouTube, and Google 2 weeks before, and they said, yes, we're an open forum. Because, see, if they're not, they can be held liable for every post, like pedophilia or whatever, on their platforms and be prosecuted. But then they turn around and they censor, and you can't do that on public forums. So my question, Tim, where the hell is Trump? Why isn't he dealing with this legally?
Oh, no, I'm not promoting Trump 100%. All I'm saying is that Trump has taken advantage of the internet to bypass the mainstream media. But here's the issue. There has never, ever been a completely free market. In fact, the closest that you come to a free market, ironically, was the black market in the Soviet Union under communism. And it controlled 52% of the economy when the Soviet Union collapsed. But everywhere, wherever you get government, the minute you introduce government at even fractionally into anything, you are losing control. Now, of course, the other side of the argument is that, well, if you have no government control, you end up with anarchy. But that, of course, is what the libertarians are asking for. So, no, I'm not going to disagree with you about Trump and the failure to apply antitrust and all the rest of it. But this is the problem. You start introducing legislation, and then people pick and choose what they want to apply. I mean, think about this absolute contradiction, where rules were designed to make a system function. But what happens when people want to make the system fail? They say, we're going to work to rule. They don't even think about how contradictory and paradoxical that is. But that's exactly what you're talking about here. So all I think that we can keep doing is trying to reduce the amount of government and the role of government and get rid of it at every possible phase. Because the minute you bring in government, it will automatically expand. And one of the things that I've done in my life is whenever I've had a chance, if you give people power, you must immediately start taking it away, because sooner or later they will abuse it. And so, for example, and I'll give you the one example I had direct involvement with. I was at a university where the president was negotiating individual contracts with the faculty members and giving the ones he liked more money than the ones he didn't like. And it turned out that there was nothing we could do about that except to form the union. Well, of course, I was opposed to a union, but they said, no, you've got to form a union, then you can get a contract with the university, and then you can start laying out what rules are and how these things are dealt with. So I was with the group, we formed the union, and we got the first contract, and we stopped this abuse of individuals by an individual. And then, within 2 weeks of getting that first contract and getting the union, I started a group to get rid of the union. And of course, they laughed at me, and I said, look, you guys, I'm telling you, in 2 years from now, you're going to be coming and complaining to me about the union taking too much of your money and telling you what you can do and can't do. Well, of course, that's exactly what happened. So people need to understand about power, and that's a very important thing with this and with Trump and with leaders. I mean, Rush Limbaugh talks about follow the money. That only applies to people at the lower levels of society, or middle and lower levels of society. Yeah, people will do things to get more money and will can be bought off. But at a certain level, like the Rockefellers or the Morris Strongs or even the Trumps, it's not about the money, it's about power. And unless you understand that these people, they know that the money comes with the power, but that's not their objective. These are the sorts of things that people have to understand if you're going to control and get the kinds of freedoms for individuals that the founding fathers envisioned.
Yeah, that's a big uphill climb, because right now I think we're at a pivotal point. We're at a pivotal point as far as technocracy goes, climate change implication policies. We're at a pivotal point in world and global politics, military power. We're at a pivotal point in everything. And so now there's a huge fight, like what we've been talking about, to control the narrative. And I think that's what we're embroiled in right now.
Well, exactly. And of course, you know, people don't even realize I chaired a commission of inquiry into a management strategy for an entire drainage basin. And the group that I was assigned as my commission, I bought some coffee and donuts for them and got them all standing around talking, and because I knew what they would talk about. And you heard things, and you hear this all throughout society. Well, the government's spending too money, wasting too money, taxes are too high. And then within 30 minutes, they're saying, well, you know, why doesn't the government do something about this? And they don't even realize the contradictions in those ideas. And of course, then we sat down as a commission, and the first topic that was raised, not by me as chair, was my per diem. How much am I going to get paid to be on this commission? And you know, and I said, okay, well, there's a farmer that's on the commission, and he has to give up work to come and serve on the commission. He should get compensated. But why should this bureaucrat who's appointed by the city, he's paid already to be here. Why should he get extra money? That's like paying a bus driver having to ride on the bus. It's insanity. But these are all of the contradictions, because we are so at such a primitive level of governments and how they should function and how they should be restricted. And that's why I say my opening comments about America being so exceptional and so unique, and why it's so important for so many people outside of America that America succeeds.
Is this what Ronald Reagan meant, in your opinion, by America's the last bastion of freedom?
Yep. Well, I would say it's the first bastion of freedom. It's not the last one. It's the first one. There isn't any other. There's no country in the world that has even a hope under current conditions that America has. That's why I'm arguing so much to support that people should be supporting America and Americans. and I hate to put this burden on you, but, you know, the obligation of the American people to retain the free will. But that's another part of this, of course, you see. Why is America under such attack? And why is Christianity under such attack? And the answer is because they both represent and are based upon free will. People don't understand that Christianity is about free will. It doesn't tell you what you should do. It says, here's what you should do, but you get to make the choice. You then are held accountable for the decisions that you make. America is exactly the same thing. It's built around free will. Well, what do people that want to control you hate more than anything else? The right that individuals have a right to free will. They can't allow that. And, Dave, when I was a teenager, there was a joke going around in England because the Labour Party, which, of course, is a pure socialist party, had taken over after the war, and they were, you know, they brought in federal government control of education, of health, and everything else. And there was a joke going around about a fellow who got a soapbox, which was in the old days a nice wooden box, and he took it to Hyde Park Corner in London. Now, Hyde Park Corner today, even today in London, is the only place in England where you can go and stand up and shout and rail against the government. Anywhere else, you get arrested. And so, of course, the guy took his soapbox to Hyde Park Corner, stood up on his soapbox and said, come the revolution, we'll do this. And come the revolution, we'll do that. And he goes down a whole list of what will happen with the revolution. And he finally says, come the revolution, we'll all wear shirts and ties. And a voice from the back of the crowd said, but I don't want to wear a shirt and tie. And the guy on the soapbox said, come the revolution, you'll do what you're bloody well told. And it was funny to me at the time, but I didn't fully realize the implications of that joke until now.
Well, yeah, they're going to make us all hang ties, and they're going to use those ties to hang us for noncompliance.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, Tim, let me ask you a question about Canada, where you're from, because I know a number of Canadians, and they're freedom-loving people. They're fiercely independent. They make great next-door neighbors. At least that's my impression. Why in the world are they putting up with this tyranny?
Well, one of the things that you have to understand is that Canada, as with the United States, was formed on the eastern seaboard. And, of course, the country simply expanded westward over history. Canada, at the time, was formed by people who fled the United States because they didn't want to get rid of the monarchy. They didn't want a republic. And, of course, you remember Benjamin Franklin's comment to Mrs. Howell when he came out of the meeting in Philadelphia, and she said, what have you given us? And he said, we've given you a republic if you can keep it. Well, there were a lot of Americans that didn't want that. They fled to Canada. And they were called then, and they still are called today, United Empire Loyalists. In other words, they're loyal to the Empire of Britain. And they still control Eastern Canada, and Eastern Canada still controls Canada. And you see that, and there are unique groups. For example, you have in the United States, you have the Cajuns. These are the French-speaking people in Louisiana. Well, a lot of them didn't want to stay under the American control. They fled to Canada, and in Canada, they're known as the Acadians. And they're a specific group in Nova Scotia that are here because they wanted to escape American republicanism. Now, what's happened, of course, is that as Canada has moved west and it's made up more of recent immigrants, it has become a very different country. And what you see in Canada is that Eastern Canada, which still dominates in numbers and therefore at the polls, is liberal or, well, really socialist. And Western Canada is more small C conservative. And there's a battle going on right now, as it did back in the day of the current Prime Minister's father, Pierre Trudeau, where a group developed that wanted Western Canadian separatism. They wanted to separate from Eastern Canada and establish their own country. Well, that is growing again now. The Western Canadian separatism is very, very active again to get away from what's happening. And there are many Canadians in Western Canada that would not be unhappy if they were annexed by the United States. So to the idea that Canada is this nice, benevolent, kind country, the only reason that Canada doesn't threaten anybody is because it hasn't got anything, any power. I mean, one of the things you have to realize is that Canada, even though it's the second largest country in the world, has the same population as California. And our military, which, by the way, the government treat the military and the veterans like dirt. I mean, it's just disgusting the way they treat the military. They pared it down. We've got 55,000 total people in our military, Navy, Army, and Air Force. And I've always joked that there are more people in the New York City police force, and they're better armed. And so when you start to look at Canada is neutral because it can't afford to be anything else. And it doesn't push anybody around because it simply can't do it. And so this myth about Canada being a nice, friendly country is just that. And the whole idea about the socialized medicine, for example, in British Columbia here, we've got 90,000 people who cannot even get a family doctor. They will not take, no doctor will take you on because they think that you have you've quit some other doctor or some other doctor is not provided for you, so they won't even allow you to be registered with them. So we have 90,000 people without a family doctor. And when I got sick recently, I had to go to the emergency at the local local hospital. I sat for 6 hours in emergency, was seen over a few days by 11 doctors, all of whom missed 2 liters of fluid on my lung. And after 6 hours in emergency, they sent me home, with 2 liters of fluid. In other words, I was in congestive heart failure. And yet here they are raging about how great the healthcare system is in Canada and all the rest of it. You simply don't hear the stories. All you hear is the left-wing media in Canada. And notice, by the way, that we've got the CBC, which is a government-controlled and funded radio and television station, completely biased. And there's no right-wing radio or TV in Canada. Well, a group set up a TV station called Sun TV, which tried to follow or align itself with Fox News, the right wing. The government of Canada refused to give it a license. And it was a conservative government that refused to give it a license. It went out of business. And they set up their own private TV station called the Rebel TV, but they are constantly being sued by various branches of government and other private agencies. So the conservative voice, the freedom voice, is constantly under attack in Canada. And all of the radio is left-wing radio. There's not a single right-wing radio outlet anywhere in Canada.
That's amazing. So what would happen to the Common Sense Show in Canada?
Well, it probably, well, obviously the beauty of it is that we can listen to it through the internet, but it wouldn't last very long. You'd have to get approval for a license from the government, what's called the Canadian Radio and Television Commission. You have to get a license of approval for them, and they probably wouldn't even give it to you.
Interesting.
And to give you an example, by the way, when that group were trying to set up Sun TV with a conservative TV channel, it was the CBC, the government-funded TV channel, that opposed them, openly opposed them, using the taxpayers' money. And this is how frightening it gets.
Wow. That is frightening. It's not only frightening, it's so disturbing. I'm surprised that the, and I agree with you, the people in the west of Canada are much more libertarian, much more conservative than the liberals in places like Toronto and Montreal, and they have the holier-than-thou attitude. And I've clearly detected that for years, Tim. But the people in the West, because they were left alone for so long because of their isolation, they developed this spirit of freedom and independence. Where is it today? Why aren't they saying no and hell no to this tyrannical government?
Well, of course, the problem is that they can't do it because the federal government has such power. I mean, whenever they start to do anything, the government introduced legislation either through taxation or some other way of suppressing what's going on. Now, a lot of the conservatism, of course, is in Western Canada is because most of the people moved there for the agricultural opportunities to become farmers. And as you know, in the farm community outside the urban areas, conservatism is much healthier, even in the United States. I mean, that's what the Trump election was all about. And you've got this urban-rural split. Now, one of the problems, and I was speaking to 1,000 farmers in Lloydminster, this is about 10 years ago, and they were saying, you know, we're not able to survive. What we're getting for our products is going down, and I asked them, well, how many of you took over the farm from your parents? And almost the whole audience put their hands up. And I said, well, how many of you know that your children are going to take over the farm from you? Less than 20% put their hands up. And they said, well, you know, how can we fight this? The government are just cutting us and controlling us. For example, this is what Trump is talking about with the NAFTA and the 270% tariffs on dairy products. The way that works, by the way, is Canada said, okay, we're going to put a tariff on. And then what they did was they gave the dairy farmers a quota. So if you had a herd of cattle, you were given a quota by the government which said how much milk you were allowed to produce. Now, the government thought it was good because it meant that the farmer was guaranteed an income for their milk. But, of course, what's happened is now the quota is more valuable than the cattle. The farmer can get more money for the quota than for the cattle and even for the farm. And this is the distortion. So we end up paying probably six times as much for a quart of milk as Americans do. But these are the kinds of distortions. But anyway, back to the group in Lloydminster. I said, well, look, what you have to do is that you have to make those people in the cities realize that they can't exist without you. And a few years before that, I created the phrase that there are no farms in the cities, but there are no cities without farms. And, of course, what happens historically is people move into the cities and then forget about the source of food production that maintains them. And when that starts to fade and fail, the whole civilization collapses. It's the main cause of collapses of civilization. So this one farmer said, well, what have we got to do? And I said, well, unfortunately, what you have to do is the one thing that you won't do. And that is that what you have to do is get together and all agree that one year you're going to tell the rest of Canada, urban Canada and eastern Canada, we're not going to put in any crops this year. We're not going to produce any cattle this year. And then see how well you cope. And I said, but here's why it won't happen. Because one of the reasons you're farmers and one of the reasons farmers are conservatives is because you're such individual cusses. It's what makes you successful. In the highest risk business in the world, where you're totally dependent on the weather and the markets, every year you put in a crop and keep your fingers crossed. And I said, you know, it's that makes you conservative and makes you successful, but it also means that you are then going to be automatically taken advantage of by groups that will get together and move against you. And so it's like the president of the Conservative Club or the Conservative Party, I should say, in Canada, one year he said the problem with the Conservatives is they call an election and the Conservatives circle their wagons and they shoot inwards. And that's exactly what you're seeing going on with the Republican Party right now. And yet on the other side, you've got the people that want total government control. Therefore, they're prepared to surrender their individual rights for the power of the party. And that's exactly what you're seeing going on in the U.S. right now. So, as I said, this was the my comment to those farmers in Lloydminster several years ago, and that sort of summarizes what's happening.
That's amazing. It's absolutely incredible that Canada is falling apart. But ask you this question, because this is what we're seeing increasingly in America. We're seeing individual farmers forced out and corporate farming taking over. Are you seeing the same phenomena in Canada?
Yes, exactly that. And, of course, it's done very cleverly, because what they'll do is they'll come in and by the way, one of the things that is accelerating it is you've got, and again, the farmers are partly responsible for it themselves. Yes, there's government legislation and Trump getting rid of the death tax, inheritance tax. In Canada, they've just, in BC here, they're just introducing an inheritance tax. So there was that. But the farmers are partly responsible for their own problems. Now, the joke in Western Canada on a farm is, what's the definition of child abuse? And the answer was leaving the farm to the children. And you know, and it sounds funny, but it's actually quite a shout out, because, and I tell the farmers, look, for 40 years you've been telling your children there's no future on the farm, so you shouldn't be surprised when you want the kids to take over the farm, they're saying, no, I'm going to the city to get a job. I want the security of all the benefits that go with that. And when you look at what farmers are having to pay for individual health insurance, even before Obamacare, it drives you out of it. And so this is the difficulty, so we're seeing exactly the same thing. And you also got I know I haven't done it in any other province, but in Manitoba there are more farmers over 70 than under 40, and that's a frightening statistic. And so, of course, then what happens is that some corporation comes along and says, hey, we'll buy up your farm, but we'll make a deal with you. You can stay on the farm and manage it for us, and then when you die, we will take over. So that the farmer says, "Oh, look, I'm getting a couple of million dollars to put in the bank right now, and I get to keep the farm as well. What a good deal!" And of course, it's like the reverse mortgages. Sounds very attractive until you actually end up finding out what you're ending up paying and what control you've given away. And so, yeah, exactly the same thing's happening in Canada.
What about the Canadian internet? Are you experiencing rigid censorship that's government, let's put it this way, government tolerated, government approved, or government sponsored?
At the moment, there's no control on the internet that I'm aware of, anyway. You also have the choice of which internet provider you want to use. But this is another part of it. Most of the internet is controlled by the telephone companies, and the telephone companies were given government mandates and control. So you had AT&T and Bell and so on were given mandates by the government to control certain amounts of the television and therefore the internet business. And that's the same thing with banks. There are five major banks in Canada, and they've got legislated control over the banking system in Canada. And the only thing that broke that, ironically, was a sort of a socialist move, because people started to form credit unions and said, okay, and that, by the way, is one of the things that Trump is doing with these associations with healthcare. You can get together as a group and form your own health association. Well, you can get together as a group and form your own credit union. But the credit unions are restricted in the kinds of banking that they can provide for people. Now, for most people, it's all that they need, but there are restrictions on what they can do, because they protect the big five banks. So everywhere you turn in Canada, there's this, it appears to be privately owned, but in fact, it's privately owned, operating under a license from the government.
Yeah, that's... it's something that we see here a lot too. You and I and Sheila had a discussion, oh gosh, 5, 6, 7 years ago about T. Boone Pickens in the Ogallala Reservoir that runs from Texas, I think, up to the Dakotas. And is that the kind of thing that is happening in Canada, too, where you're talking about this centralization of power? We're seeing it here in America with our utilities. Do you have the same issue?
No, because, well, I say no, we've already got it. In every province, and this is one of the things where the battle is in Canada, the resources in the province, which is equivalent to your states, is owned by the province. But if you've got a resource in your province, let's say you've got water and you want to ship water to the neighboring province, then the federal government control that movement. So even though you've got individual control within the province, in so many things, the federal government control. Now, with regard to energy in each province is controlled by a province agency. All of them are called hydro. So, for example, we've got BC Hydro, and in Manitoba we had Manitoba Hydro, Quebec Hydro, Ontario Hydro. They're called hydro because in most of Canada, and through most of its certainly early history, the majority of the power was produced from hydroelectricity. And so you have these government agencies that technically are arm's length from the government, supposedly to give them some sort of autonomy, but it's actually state controlled. And so any energy that's produced within any province is controlled by the government through these agencies. Now, one of the most frightening ones, and one of the interesting ones to look at, is in Ontario, which was throughout Canada's history the most powerful and economic power in Canada. And Ontario Hydro, in 1992, they put in charge of it, as chairman of Ontario Hydro, a fellow by the name of Maurice Strong. And that was the same year. That was the same year that he was that he chaired the Rio conference in Agenda 21, which introduced the whole global warming and energy control thing. And what he did in Ontario was that he introduced all of the legislation that he wanted the rest of the world to introduce through Agenda 21, through the IPCC. So Ontario had built nuclear power plants, and they were functioning very well, and it had coal-burning plants and hydroelectric plants. It had a diversity of energy sources. He moved in, and he stopped construction of any further nuclear development. He stopped maintenance of the nuclear plant so that ultimately they're going to have to go out of business. He stopped construction of any coal plants and started to shut down coal plants. And he built wind turbine places all over the province. What he did was, within a matter of 5 or 6 years, took Ontario from being the most powerful economic province in Canada to being one of the poorest. And today, it's got, as a province, it's got more debt per capita than any other political region in the world. Wow. In the world.
You know, Tim,
it's going to take them. Yeah.
I was going to ask you, and you just headed me off at the pass. How's Canada doing with Agenda 21? And I think you just answered my question pretty thoroughly here.
Well, yeah, but it's more than that, because you see, one of the things that we have in Canada is the government decided that equalization of wealth, that it wasn't fair that some people were rich and other people were poor, and that the government had to redress that. And so we set up a system, I call it federal welfare, where each province is designated under an economic formula as being a have province or a have not province. If you're a have province, you have to pay money to the federal government. If you're a have not province, you get money from the federal government. And Ontario, throughout all of its history up until Strong took over, was a half province. It now gets money from the federal government as a half not province. So what's happened is, you know, in instead of dealing with the energy problem and what that's cost them, they've got this money from the government that papers over the problem, and so no politician has dealt with it. Now, what you saw was a revolt in Ontario in the recent provincial election, where they got rid of the socialist government, the NDP, and they voted in a conservative government under Doug Ford. The only question is whether Doug Ford can manage the debt of Ontario Hydro and get the energy back on scale, particularly because Ontario also benefited as much as any other province from the free trade agreement. Ontario got huge benefits from the free trade agreement. So if Trump cuts those, Ontario's going to be in real difficulty. But the other point I want to make to you, Dave, is that people need to understand that when you argue with the socialists, they'll say, the Agenda 21, it's not compulsory. But what they've done is, you remember the phrase that was created by René Dubos in Gro Harlem Brundtland's book on the world future, Commission on the World Future, and that was the phrase that you think globally and act locally. You remember that phrase?
Remember it well.
Okay, well, that's exactly what they've done. That they're not pushing anymore. Although they're trying they tried it with the Kyoto and that failed, and now they're trying it with the Green Climate Fund, which replaced Kyoto, and that was what was approved in Paris, but even that's failing. And so what they're doing is they're working down at the lowest level of government, that is the municipal level of government. Now, I don't know what that is in the United States, but
it'd be the same thing. We have federal, state, local. And Tim, my friend, we are out of time, but this comparison to have Americans look at Canada, because it's a portent of what's coming here, and I just wanted to thank you for coming on. We're going to do this again. I feel like we're stopping in midstream, but I think my listeners got the idea that we don't want to be like Canada, and Canada's being taken down a road we desperately need to avoid. I want to thank you for illuminating that and being a guest here on the Common Sense Show.
Oh, thank you, Dave. And by the way, common sense isn't very common.
Thank you. Let's hope we can live up to our name, Tim.
Exactly.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Tim Ball, and we will be back after a word from these sponsors.